Hello and welcome to the Chris Allen Podcast, brought to you in association with WCR-FM, Wolverhampton's local radio station, which you can hear on 101.8 FM, online at wcrfm.com, or by telling your smart speaker to play WCR-FM. My guests on this week's podcast are Priya Kumar of PK Dance on how dance can help you make you healthy in every sense of the word. We'll also be hearing from Gray from Wolverhampton Samaritans, as next Monday is Brew Monday, often seen as Blue Monday, for many the most depressing day of the year. We'll be hearing from Councillor Stephen Simpkins as he looks forward to the Literature Festival here in February. And Jez Howell from the Fatherhood Institute will be talking about the changing patterns of fatherhood and the need for legislation to catch up. Public Health Director John Denley will also be saying how we might look after ourselves, especially with there being so much pressure on the health service. So first of all, Debbie Huxton and I invited Priya Kumar to join us on Rise and Shine on Sunday mornings, and I put it to Priya that they've been working with many community groups around the city.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So there's been so many groups that we've been in touch with in different community parts of Wolverhampton, which has been amazing. So it varies from children and adults. So luckily we've been able to do sessions for the Haven, so visiting their safe spaces, work with Aspiring Futures, we've done a few Zumba sessions for the ladies there, YMCA, positive participation, there's been a Sport England campaign that we've done, so it's been quite a lot.
I'm exhausted just listening.
Oh, I love it. How did you get started?
I started dancing at a fairly young, late age, I thought. So most people start dancing at 3. I danced at like 15 at a dance school around the corner, Sonia Webb's Academy of Dance. So I started there as a hobby. Never did dance in school as a subject or anything. Just really enjoyed it. Ended up pursuing it in uni, doing my master's, doing my PGCE. Just got into it that
so
way.
So you went. Really. That's a big thing to go and do. So it wasn't just a kind of, oh, well, I'll give this a go. I might start a business. Yeah. You actually studied it all as well and pursued it.
Yeah, I live and breathe it now. So like, right. I'm just so passionate about it, really. But I wanted to go to uni and I knew I was a sporty person anyway. But then I wasn't too sure what I wanted to do, and the one thing I knew I would never change my mind about was dance.
Right.
So what got you into it at 15? Because like you said, it is kind
diversity,
of...
Diversity. The dance group. Yeah, so they won Britain's Got Talent and my friend said, oh, let's go to a dance class. And I was like, But I ended up going. I really enjoyed it.
And were you doing that kind of dancing?
Yeah, so hip-hop and street dance I started to do.
What's their genre called?
Street dance.
Right.
Wow. And you said could you imagine me and you do that? Diversity.
Diversity, yeah. I think we'll move on quickly. But you said passionate about it as well. That's more than just the dancing, isn't it? It's the impact it has on people.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, luckily for me, I get to see different communities and different people. So loads of people are going through different things. Loads of people are experiencing traumas or they're just struggling with school. But to see how dance helps the community and families and the parents of children, like, it's insane, like, to see.
Right, right. So, well, because you have to be quite brave to join in a dance, you know.
Yeah.
Especially as a dad, obviously, we're stereotyped into dad dancing, whatever. So you have to be quite brave, and for parents and children to get together and children not give a, you know, look out the corner of the eye and things like that. So how do you encourage people?
I think when I'm teaching, I'm a bit of a lunatic, to be honest. I can't lie. So just generally encouraging. So I think just creating a safe space, just where a child feels welcome or even an adult feels welcome, where they know that they're in a safe space. And if they're shy, usually like the parents usually step out anyways. But it just depends on the child. But you can always gauge it when they walk through. Like, you get a sense of like what their personality is as soon as you see them. So
Yeah.
I love that you said safe space. That's something that since we've gone through the pandemic is really, really important for people. And we hear that word used all the time, but it's lovely to see it put into practice.
Yeah.
Because when people feel safe, that's when they're able to open up and blossom. I love the fact that you read the people when they come in and you kind of gauge where they are so you know how to approach it.
Yes.
So what's your favourite thing that you've seen happen?
Oh my God, okay, so because I work in a secondary school as well, the one thing that I've seen children that can't regulate in classes, they can't regulate in a normal timetable.
Yeah.
I've seen children come off their timetable because they're having a really hard time and approach me for dance lessons.
Wow.
And they've come and they've engaged, they've focused, they've settled, and they've really enjoyed it to the point where they've brought members of staff in to perform. And that's a big thing, so...
You were talking earlier about children who perhaps struggle at school and yet they sort of get into the dancing and then it helps their educational attainments as well. They go back in, they get the confidence in the classroom. So confidence building, big thing.
So it's a massive thing. So I get to see children in school and outside of school for extracurricular, or they when they come to like the dance classes. So I've seen children, their resilience is building because they can't do something, they'll come back, they'll practice and they've done it again, or they start to help other people, that their growth, that appreciation for other people in the community. Like, it's just really nice to see. So really,
and it shows that the health benefits are not just about sort of losing weight, not just the physical ones, are they?
Yeah, no, it's like massive mental impact. So you've got your regulation of your like stress hormones, reduction of anxiety, depression, stress. As I said, building resilience. It helps you to focus when you're thinking about your routines, your memory. So information recalling is a massive one. So,
yeah.
Wow. So actually, it's good for us then as we get older. To help us with our memory, Chris, so we don't forget.
Pardon?
What did you say?
What did you say? No, indeed. And you were saying earlier you were even helping people in their 60s.
Yeah.
Learn to dance.
Yeah.
I love that. But actually, I went to a care home early last year, and they'd got a dance teacher in there teaching dementia patients to dance. Well, they weren't really teaching them. They were just getting them to dance, and they were remembering steps when they were younger. And I saw an amazing video of a ballet dancer who's got severe dementia in her kind of late 60s, early 70s, and she was a prima ballerina. But when they play the music, she comes to life in dance. Absolutely incredible.
It's powerful.
Yeah. Very powerful.
And you were saying about weddings as well, you know, so because that opening dance.
I told you.
Terrifying. Terrifying. Yeah. So do people come along to you because actually they think, oh, we've got to dance at the wedding and therefore I don't want to look stupid.
Yeah, so we have a mixture. We have like couples that come in that want the first dance, or we have couples that come in on like a surprise where they want to surprise their bride or their groom on their days. It's actually quite funny. I love doing them. So
I think it's probably, if you've got two people dancing together, it's quite an intimate experience, isn't it? So it can create bonds.
Yeah, it really does. So it obviously depends on like the couple and what they want. So you'll sit down and chat to them, what do they like and things. So they put like lifts, like leans, like lots of trust building, especially with the wedding. So and remembering the routine on the day.
And coming back to children, it's quite a team building exercise, isn't it? If they're doing it in a group, like you said, you started off when you saw diversity, and they're quite a big dance troupe, aren't they? So it must involve quite a lot of teamwork and building unity and trust and rapport.
So I mean, it's quite a big thing for someone who's shy and nervous to come into a group setting. So setting them off into like small groups is always the best way. But it's not just dancing that's the key; it's the creation as well. Getting them on task, creating your own little sections, like that's where you see everyone start to grow in confidence and that unity you speak of. So.
And would you say everyone can dance?
I would say. Would you? It's for everybody.
Chris, is
that well, I went to my son's wedding earlier in the year and I was on two crutches then because, you know, of my... And I could dance in with a pair of crutches, so therefore... And in fact, when you were stomping, the crutches really helped. Made a lot of noise. What events have you got coming up, Priya, that people need to know?
We've got loads of classes now. We're back in January. So we've got children's classes on Saturdays and Tuesdays. We have adult classes for hip-hop, ballet, contemporary. A fitness class we have is Zumba every Wednesday, which is really fun. I love wooing in people's faces. It's the best thing ever.
And how do people get in touch with you?
So we have a Facebook page and an Instagram page. You can find us on PK Dance Company on Facebook, and it's the same on Insta. And you can send us a direct message or an email on pkdanceco.com.
Indeed, and I found it, so therefore anybody can.
Yeah. You know. So what would your kind of, for 2023, what would your kind of inspiration for people out there be?
I think just try something new. Try something for yourself. Just get out there and just push boundaries. Just try something new. Listen to music, get up, dance, just have fun. Like, have fun, that is the main thing.
That's Priya Kumar of PK Dance, and yes, you can find all about them by looking up their Facebook page, PK Dance, and there's also a link in the show notes too. Gray from Samaritans here in Wolverhampton is one of the fantastic volunteers that help support us sometimes during the most difficult of times. And I put it to her, and that sometimes Christmas and New Year, and especially as we get into January, it can be a difficult time for some.
Absolutely. It can be that time where you're reflecting on life and you can be thinking about, oh, I had such a great Christmas and New Year, and be a bit of a come down. And it can just be challenging, full stop, for anybody.
And I think also that it's the busiest month of the year when it comes to funerals as well, that people sort of hang on through Christmas and then, you know, then, OK, we've got a new year. So not always, you know, a happy time for people at all.
No, it can be really, really tough.
And over Christmas, you were obviously on, you know, chatting to people online and then going into New Year. Do you see a change at this time of year? Because it does stir up our emotions, doesn't it? This sort of the holiday season.
I think as we move through the year from different season to season and different holiday and different event, we kind of just have a steady communication with people about their feelings and their challenges. And with us being a 24/7, 365 days a year service, we get a full representation of like the whole human experience. And I say that quite frequently. Mm. And so I don't kind of see a specific topic being brought up more than others. It's just we kind of are more aware of how we're feeling these days and the need to have somebody to listen to. And so our phone lines are always busy.
And how do you prepare for that? How do Samaritans prepare you for that? I know you do extensive training for all your volunteers as well. But it's, you know, if anything can be thrown your way, how do you prepare for that?
We're really lucky that we have such wonderful support, and I'm quite biased. Our branch, we've got a lot of support, as do all the other Samaritans in all the other branches. So when you kind of register an interest to become a Samaritan online, somebody will contact you and have an interview, and then you start your training process. And through that training process, lots of things are discussed and talked about, and you kind of are guided on the best way to support someone and how to listen properly and lots of different things. But it's always drummed into us that we need to talk as well and we need to share our feelings as well. Right. And we have a shift leader and wonderful leadership team at the branch that anybody could talk to, but also your shift companion as well. And so if we do have very challenging calls that affect us as volunteers, we then kind of get the opportunity to talk as well.
Yeah, you can't bottle it all up inside you, because then it can take over you as well. And from what you were saying there, it sounds like listening is more important than talking.
Yeah, it is. It I think when you're having a conversation with somebody, it's a good rule of thumb. We've got two ears and one mouth, as my mum would always say. But it just reminds you in your brain to really listen and kind of give people space to share how they're really feeling.
Now, Week Tomorrow is nicknamed Blue Monday, but you've put a bit of a twist on it in order to give it a positive side to it, and you're going to call it Brew Monday. Tell us a little bit about the thinking and what you hope people will do.
Absolutely. So the 16th of January, which is a Monday, is dubbed the most sad day of the year. Statistically, it's the most depressing day. And we don't think that any one day can be a day that you are sad or feeling depressed or struggling. And so we like to change it to Brew Monday and encourage you to have a cup of tea or coffee, whatever your choice of poison is, with somebody, and just be there to listen and check in on each other and just see how you're doing. And so we hope that on the 16th, everybody will turn the kettle on, give somebody a call or meet somebody face to face and just have a conversation, just see how everybody's doing.
So you said just a peg to hang things on, really, in terms of getting in touch with each other and supporting each other. Is that on the website as well? Samaritans.org is obviously the place you can go to to find out how you might become a Samaritan yourself, but also all the information around all the things you do.
Absolutely, yeah. If you head over to the website, you'll be able to find everything that we're up to and more.
And this year is quite an important year for Samaritans.
It is. We have a big birthday. We're 70 years old this year. And so we're hoping to really kind of raise awareness even more so by tapping into our 70 years of experience and shouting about it, really.
Anything that you've got lined up in Wolverhampton? I know you did your own, you've done music for Christmas, had your choir. That's still online. I know people can still buy it. They may wait till next December now for your coverage of that. Anything else you've got lined up locally
There is going to be a music festival in July that's going to be arranged by somebody local that will be supporting the Samaritans. So we're hoping that we're going to be able to kind of support him in that, so that we can help raise awareness and have people come and enjoy some music together at the New Hampton Arts Centre in July. But for Brew Monday, we are hoping to get into some of Wolverhampton's warm spaces and provide tea and coffee for anybody who needs a warm space and something warm to drink. So keep your eyes peeled for us in the warm spaces.
That's really good. Yeah, and if you want to know more about warm spaces, again, it's on the council website, wolverhampton.gov.uk. And there's many places around the city. It's really good to see. And there's also a transport to get people there if they want to as well. So you're going to be popping into some of those.
Yes. Yeah. We're hoping to do some tea, some coffee, maybe a biscuit or two, and have some conversations and just be present and help in those spaces.
And just to remind people of your number, 116123, may not be for you. It might be just you saying to someone else, you know, perhaps give them a ring. You know, if actually you just want to chat to somebody about something that's confidential, do that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Give us a call, or if speaking on the phone isn't something that you're comfortable with, you can always email us at joe@samaritans.org.
Indeed. And going back to what you were saying earlier about the support you get, because you would do a lot of listening to people, a lot of absorbing their issues. It's the same for all of us, really. Don't absorb, do share. If you can't do it within a family, if you don't feel there's anywhere you can go to, then Samaritans are always there.
You said it better than I could.
Not sure about that. That's great from Samaritans here in Wolverhampton. And if you want to be in touch with them, obviously 116123 is the number to ring. And you can find out information about Samaritans at samaritans.org. Councillor Stephen Simpkins is the Deputy Leader of the City of Wolverhampton Council. He's also the Member for the Inclusive Economy and also Bilston East Councillor as well. When I caught up with him, I said, are you looking forward to the Literature Festival next month?
Oh, just, you know what? It gets bigger and bigger each year. It's really exciting with that international reach. That puts, and if you look at the lineup of the programme, there's a lot of our children involved in this at the grammar school and Lord of the Flies and, you know, and the stuff that we do for the rest of our residents. It's important that we give a platform to our people.
Yeah,
that's really important, but encourage people to come and visit as well, not just to sit online.
Indeed, absolutely. Get to the shows, get to the different presentations well. And if people want to know where to go to, I'll mention it now, I might forget later. It's wolvesliteraturefestival.co.uk. You can get all your tickets there online. And as you say, this is, you know, it's a great event. It's going on over 3 days, first weekend in February. But it also brings people into the city, doesn't it? It has a big impact on the economy.
Do you know what? I was at the Grand Theatre over Christmas at the pantomime, and that draws in 60,000 visitors.
Wow.
So that's, you know, over the Christmas period, that draw, and then February, you've got Literature Festival, and that's what we want to do. We want a rolling programme of people coming, visiting our city, enjoying themselves, telling neighbours and friends, and come back. And that's what we're aiming for. And that's the key component for the civic halls, because we've been devoid for the last couple of years of people to come into our city and entertainment. So the hospitality sector for the economy, sorry to go on to be brief, is really key for our city moving forward. So that's exciting for us that'll come on this year.
And because of the historic image of the Black Country in Wolverhampton, is it a harder battle to sell at times? Because there's such great things going on here, such great places.
Do you know what? I think me and most of my fellow Bilstonians and Wolverhampton are very parochial. So it's great knowledge that's kept within the city of Wolverhampton. We've got to project that out. And that's what we're aiming to do, is to project that and say, yeah, come and enjoy yourself. Come and have, you know, tell us what you want us to put on, and we'll do that and we'll listen. Because that's what the authority is about. We listen and learn moving forward. So I think we're a little bit parochial and we're a little inward looking. We should be more outward. We've got a great story to tell about Wolverhampton and Bilston, and we should be more vocal in that.
Yeah.
I'm extremely proud, as you know, to come from Bilston. That's a part of Wolverhampton as well. So I'm proud of Wolverhampton as well. And I think we've got to start and get that positive message out. And it's about positivity. And it's just, I mean, I go back to the football last night. What a match. What an absolute match. And we should be through to the next round. I don't care what everybody says about VAR.
Oh, I had a rant earlier on this morning on my first show. I had a rant.
Definitely go. We'll do them over, I think, when they come back to Molyneux.
That's right.
Would be great if we could get them down Queen Street, but hey, I can live a dream.
Well, I noticed even Lee Westwood, the golfer, has got 260,000 followers on Twitter. He put out a tweet saying, why was that goal disallowed? You know,
even Robbie Fowler.
Yeah.
You know, a stalwart of Liverpool football.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anyway, we've drifted slightly, but these are important things we're proud of across the Black Country, across Wolverhampton, across Bilston, across Wensfield, you know. And
Each area, each ward has got its own unique identity that makes up Wolverhampton, and we should all be celebrating that. It'd be Tetnall, it'd be Bilston, Wensfield, you know, Fallings Park. It's unique that makes our city. So that's I've always thought that there's space for everybody within our city, and that's where we should celebrate it.
Indeed. And at the Literary Festival, obviously WCRFM is going to have a part to play. We're going to be down in the community hub here in the Mander Centre, and we'll have live shows. Well, we've got shows right through the day, but we'll also be doing a live broadcast from there on the Friday, the Saturday, and I think it's me on the Sunday. This time on the Sunday, I'll be there, all being well. Anything particularly you look forward to? Because there's comedy, there's poetry, there's all sorts of stuff if people go to the website to find out. Anything that floats your boat?
Well, Lord of the Flies is an iconic play, and I think it's really, and it's for children and adults, but primarily by children.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. If we can get the future actors, artists, sound studio engineers, lighting cameras from just one play, then we've all done a good job, because that opens up the arts to everyone. And you know, I ain't no great artist or have any great knowledge of art, but yeah, I know what I like.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I think if you know what you like and you love doing what you're doing, that encourages you to do more and learn more. And I think that's what the Literature Festival offers. It opens up so many different avenues to people,
And again, if you go to the website, then you've got children and families comedy, you've got literature readings, music, art, film, poetry, storytelling, all sorts of stuff on there. So do go to wolvesliteraturefestival.co.uk. Some things you pay for, some things are free, but there's something there for everybody. So what's going on down in Bilston at the moment that you're proud of, that you want to shout about?
Just go harping back to football. We had a bit of a top of the division clash with Dudley Town, which was a thrilling football match, sending offs and goals and missed penalties, you know, penalties that were given. And it was, you know, great support by everyone. And that's great for our town, and that's great for Bilston. And we've had the Christmas period with the market. It was fantastic all over Christmas. I've got to pay tribute to Simon Archer, who's done a fantastic job with getting the ice rink there, first time ever. It was wonderful. So, and I hope everybody has a peaceful new year and everybody enjoys a great time that we can have in Wolverhampton, a great time we can come and have and visit Bilston.
And remember to support your local shops, and remember to support your local literature festival.
Do you know what? It's so important that we support our local businesses at whatever level or whatever area of business that they're in, because it retains the economy back into Wolverhampton. Same with the Literature Festival. It's really important that we project outside of the city to bring people in.
That's Councillor Stephen Simpkins looking forward to the Wolverhampton Literature Festival. If you want to know more, go to wolvesliteraturefestival.co.uk. Jez Howell of the Fatherhood Institute has a responsibility for developing and delivering training and development programmes for father-inclusive parenting. The Fatherhood Institute actually was new to me and came along a little too late for my children. But anyway, I asked Jez Howell to tell us a little bit about it.
Okay, so we're a UK-based charity, although we work globally, and we've been around for about 22 years now. We're a really small charity. Our work is based on the evidence. So we're a research institute, and we use the evidence of families and fatherhood to inform our campaigning work. We do lots of campaigning work. We do lots of policy work with different government departments and people like the Royal College of Midwives, for example. And my job is to translate all of this evidence and what we know about fathers and engaging fathers and supporting all family and children services. So from conception onwards, midwives, health visitors, right. social workers, schools, to really see fathers in the families that they're working with and see the impact these dads make to their children, and really how to unpick some of the barriers to engaging with them.
And family life has changed over the years, really, and perhaps legislation has not carried on changing with it. So therefore, it's very much centred around mums rightly having the time off to recover from childbirth, and also the early part of a child's life. But also, we need to adapt so that dads have a full part to play and get the chance to play that.
Absolutely. And I think the key thing here is about choice and flexibility, so that we give families what they need for it to work for their individual family. And that will look different from one household to the next. But fathers are doing more now than ever before. So when I was born in the 70s, fathers were spending, on average, around 15 minutes a day of care of their children.
Really? Right.
15 minutes. It had risen 800% by 1997.
Yeah.
And that rise really came from mothers going into the workplace. So it wasn't that fathers had amazing paternity leave, or there were big campaigns for new dads or anything like that.
Or this great revelation and we ought to get on with and do our job bit, you know.
So it had gone up from 15 minutes to 2 hours. So how I was fathered was very different to how children in the 90s were fathered. It doubled again in 2015, went up to 4 hours a day, and then kind of reached a plateau because there were no policies to kind of really support men.
Yeah.
During lockdown, it doubled again. So they were doing around 8 hours a day of hands-on care with their
right,
baby.
Right.
So it was a huge transformative thing. And lockdown, although it was awful for many, many people, one of the real gains made was for fathers and their relationships with their children. So 85% of fathers spent more time with their children. They also did more homeschooling and helping with the homework. 72% of dads did more housework, more cleaning, more laundry, more cooking. 73% said their relationship with their child has improved. And here's the heartbreaker. Half of fathers said now they're more likely to say, I love you,
right,
to their children.
Right.
And all of that happened because they had time with their children. There wasn't a great, you know, public health campaign on the back of buses. It was just when you allow dads to have time with their children, fathers and children and mothers gain from that.
I've had the privilege of working at home most of my life, actually. So therefore, when my children were young and around, then I could spend time with them. So with the changing patterns, because we learned through COVID about home working again. Mm-hmm. So even though there would be more going back to working from an office, patterns have changed now. So fathers have got the chance to carry on really beyond COVID, the COVID lockdowns, in order to nurture their children.
Yeah, absolutely. We predicted that the time fathers were spending with their children would not slip back to pre-pandemic levels, because in our research and our reports, fathers were telling us, we want to hang on to this time. So they looked for jobs with less commuting times. They looked for jobs where they could do things more flexibly, so work from home a couple of days a week. Some of them completely changed careers. And the real motivation behind that was to spend time with their children. So now working fathers spend 37% of their work time at home, right, compared with 6% in 2015. So fathers are working from home more often. So basically, fathers are doing more with their children. They're spending more time with their children. They're doing more housework. They are absolutely there. And what we are lacking really is any kind of reflection or revealing or support for these fathers, because we still maintain this kind of mother focus.
And only 2 weeks of paternity leave.
Yeah, yeah. So what we're saying from the very, very start, and even during the pregnancy, when dads were only allowed to take time off work unpaid for 2 antenatal appointments. Now, which one do you go to? Do you go to a scan? Do you go to the... I mean, how would you know which one to go to?
Yeah.
And then at this transformation, this creation of the family, we're saying... Mothers, you can have up to 2 years at home, some of it really well paid. But dads, you can have 2 weeks, less than the national living wage. It's about £159.60 a week. You can have 2 weeks and then get back to work, mate. You know, you're not needed at home, get back in the workforce. But what we're saying to mothers is, not really needed in the workforce, stay at home. And all of that really matters when it comes to things like maternity discrimination. So if an employer sees a man and a woman going for the same job, right, they're the same age, say they're 29, if things were more equal and we didn't know which one was going to have the leave when the baby was born, they wouldn't be able to discriminate against the women.
And are you being listened? There's obviously lots of change. Are you being listened to? Because, you know, it's like legislation support nowadays is about, I don't know, 40 years out of date, maybe longer than that, really. Are you being listened to and that people are sort of saying, yes, society is changing, relationships are changing, families are changing? I'm thinking about perhaps 2 gay dads, you know, together, because they've only got, you know, a couple of weeks and they've got to choose who's going to have it.
Yeah, they have to choose which one's going to have it. Are we being listened to? There are certainly shifts, certainly in the last 20 years. What often happens is all parties will have this on the table and they will say, no, we really need to look at this now. And actually, this kind of golden moment around the time the baby is born sets so many things in concrete. We need to get that bit right. And then they all kind of chicken out a bit and pull back. And what we end up, we've got this thing called shared parental leave at the moment, which was meant to cure things. But only a tiny proportion of families are eligible for it. It only really works if the mother earns more, significantly more than the father. The leave the dad takes is reliant on what the mother is entitled to. Right. And he can't take any additional top-ups. You know, it's really basic. So, you know, it doesn't work. We need more conversations. We've got a new campaign this year called Daddy Leave, which is the drive for a decent conversation about this. And we're not the only ones. Charities, NGOs from across the country are all saying the same thing, that so many things are kind of concreted in at this period. So gender equality, maternal mental health, all of that really matters at this key point, and we need a better conversation about it.
I was going to say to you, you know, in an era in which equality and diversity has been very much taken very seriously and it's been worked at, it's been positively promoted, to have this sitting at the heart of family life is quite, I don't know whether the word's ironic, it's certainly wrong, really, and it needs addressing. And if people want to know more about you, where do they go and find out more? It's not just for dads, it's for moms as well, because it's about the whole family, isn't it?
Absolutely. So the website is thefatherhoodinstitute.org. You can find us on Twitter. We're also on Facebook. We're on Instagram, but we don't really know how to use it.
That's Jess Howell of the Fatherhood Institute. Yeah, we all feel that way about Instagram if we're just a bit longer in the tooth than some others. If you want to know more, go to fatherhoodinstitute.org and you can find out all about the training programs and everything that they have on offer there. John Denley is the Director of Public Health at the City of Wolverhampton Council. We obviously know that the NHS is under a lot of pressure at the moment. So putting politics aside, what can we do to try to ease that pressure and take things into our own hands in terms of looking after ourselves?
As you say, it's not necessarily about where we are with politics at all. It's more about actually what's going on within the population at the moment. So what we've got with COVID, which we talked about frequently, is just before Christmas, the average, or the number we were looking at really, was one in every 60 people have got COVID in the population. So walking around, one in every 60.
Right.
This week, national estimates, and that applies to West Midlands and ourselves here in Wolverhampton, it's one in 20.
Oh,
okay,
wow.
So that means that there's a lot of COVID around, a lot of COVID. Now, the thing is, we've always said between ourselves, and we said, look, COVID hasn't gone away. Well, the harmful effects of COVID, if you're vaccinated and you're up to date, yeah, absolutely, it's manageable and it's part of that. Let's live with it. But the vaccine doesn't prevent you from getting COVID. It just lowers the risk of serious illness. So those people who would have been in intensive care, probably some people, a few of people who've got COVID will still require hospitalisation, not necessarily intensive care. And also, I don't know anybody who doesn't know somebody around that hasn't got one of the nasty viruses knocking around, and we include flu in that. So that's also causing pressure on the NHS, plus the backlog and everything that's been going on in the past couple of years. So it's a very, very, very tough time for our NHS, which makes it hard for us to access healthcare ourselves, really. And at the end, coming back to that part of saying, so how do we help ourselves? I kind of think about things in terms of three ways. Firstly, if I'm not feeling well at all in terms of cough, flu, or whatever, I don't even bother going to my GP at the moment, really. Right. Actually, I shouldn't have done before it was busy. I'd go to the pharmacist, if anything. Or if you know how to manage that with paracetamol or whatever, I'd go to my local supermarket or so forth to get it really, really, really cheaply. So your pharmacist will probably give you an idea as well of whether you need to go and see your GP or so forth. And then you start making decisions with that. If you're seriously ill or anything, obviously continue to use A&E and ambulance service as possible, but get advice from 111. They are really getting a lot more responsive. They're really, particularly in where we are. And that also is a kind of tool on a tool belt in relation to self-care and management and give you a better direction.
And that seems to the big push on 111 at the moment. I've heard that. And it does seem to be more responsive. And I suppose the pharmacists and 111, it's a new way of looking after ourselves, a new way of monitoring ourselves, isn't it? Because normally it's get to the GP. That's what everybody is tended to do. So we're having to think in new ways.
Absolutely. It really does. And again, I kind of think of it as almost like a pyramid. Top of the pyramid is absolute acute care. And as you walk down from there, it's A&E. Would you go there? It's okay. If you've got your GP, you've got your pharmacist, and you've got self-care. Lots we can do around self-care. And we all know ourselves, don't we, when we need a little bit of care and additional care. And what 111 does will give you another tool on the tool belt to kind of think, well, what do I need to do here? With absolute emergencies, use exactly the same route you always have. And if we relieve some of the pressure off the NHS by taking care of self-care and using other routes, it enables us to get more responsive and get the emergency care we need when we really appropriately need it.
And you mentioned there about 1 in 20 regarding COVID as opposed to 1 in 50 before Christmas. And that's probably why you've got pop-up clinics still. Bilson Village, Bilson Market, I should say. Park Village, we'll give out the dates and times for those. But showing again.
Yeah, Bilston.
COVID's not over.
That's the thing with Bilston. Every Thursday and Friday, we're in Bilston. And that's 9 till 3 all day. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, all the time at Park Village from 10 till 4. On Tuesday, that's 1 till 7 for those who are coming home from work or so forth. But the Manda Centre as well. We're the only area in the Black Country that's still got that, we call it a vaccination centre, that's up and running 7 days a week in the Manda Centre at your convenience.
Yeah, well, we know where that is. That's really good.
Yes, we do.
That's really good to know. So you mentioned a couple of things there we can do to look after ourselves. What else is on your list there that we can do to look after ourselves?
Well, there's also, you've got the physical elements in terms of ailments and so forth, but you also got your kind of well-being as well. It's I don't necessarily buy into New Year's resolutions, but what we do get is the opportunity in a new year to think about how can we look after ourselves. So not only just for the mind, the body or so forth, keep physically active as much as possible. And that's not about going and sprinting everywhere, but it's more about just getting out and about. Yeah. Something about connecting with people as well, you know, give, help, so forth. All those things, we call them five ways to well-being. It's good to Google or use your search engines or others available to have a look at that. And it'll give you an insight to staying well, mentally and physically, are very, very well linked. And if you can do that, I think chances are you have a really good year.
And I suppose we're learning lessons. We learned some obviously difficult lessons in COVID, but that was one of the better lessons we learned, being allowed to go out and exercise. Obviously, government saw that was going to be really important. And perhaps some of us learned to go on walks again at that time. Keep it going.
And was it about having a walk with someone and a group and so forth? It's a marvelous opportunity to kind of deep breath there, breath of fresh air, but also just connecting and conversing with people, and it limits social isolation and keeps you well and healthy.
And what are your kind of health hopes for 2023, if I can put that? Because obviously it's been a really difficult journey over the past few years. Where do you think we might be in a year's time, or is that completely unpredictable?
We know about the unpredictability with COVID and variants. We still always keep an eye on that. And it's great that we're prepared and we work so well together to be able to do that. I think there's a lot of work to do around what I'd call as the baked-in things that we've had over the past couple of years, in terms of people haven't been able to access necessarily because of lockdowns and so forth, routine checkups and so forth. So I think one of the key things we're going to be doing with the NHS is the NHS health check, trying to get as many people over 40 to get themselves checked by their GP in a kind of separate clinic type thing, and try and reach into the communities to be able to do that. Again, learning the lessons of doing what we did at such a massive scale with the vaccination program. We can do that in terms of health checks, in terms of cholesterol, blood pressure, all the kind of things to say, well, actually, I think we need to look at this a little bit better. Also, there's something about, you know, how can we take down some of the barriers that prevent people from being physically active, which will help us around keeping ourselves well, not just mentally, but physically. So by the end of the year, hopefully, people are back on schedule in relation to knowing their own health, making sure that we've picked up anything that we might be able to sort out together with our healthcare professionals, but also really going hard on some of those preventative things that will keep you well in your body as well as your mind.
That's a Director of Public Health at the City of Wolverhampton Council, John Denley. And that's it for this podcast. If you have any information for me to share on the podcast or on WCRFM, then you can email me chris@wcrfm.com.